From Iowa Public Radio News, I'm Ben Kiefer. This is The Exchange. It's Politics Day here on The Exchange, a chance to get some analysis about recent state and national political news, and a chance for you to let us know what's on your mind. Of course, the outcome of the Blagojevich trial is headline news today. We'll talk about that, but plenty of other items as well. A new poll lists former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee as the early favorite of Republicans in the state for the 2012 presidential race. We'll discuss the caucuses, which are 18 months away, and the weakening of support among Democrats for President Obama. My guests, political scientists Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College and Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University. What's on your political mind? Join our discussion after this news. This is The Exchange from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and it's Politics Day here on The Exchange, a chance to get some analysis from recent state and national political news from our bevy of political analysts, and a chance for you to let us know what's on your mind. Of course, we've been hearing about the outcome of the Blagojevich trial in the news today. We'll talk about that. But there are plenty of other items to discuss as well. This hour, we also want to glance at the caucuses, even though they are 18 months away. A new poll lists former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee as the early favorite of Republicans in the state for the 2012 presidential race. We also want to talk about the weakening of support among Democrats for President Obama. And this week, Governor Culver admitted mistakes that have been made on his watch, and his father made campaign stops last week in support of his son. We'd like to discuss that. We'd also like you to join our conversation and ask you to ask a question or make a comment about what's in the politics column of your mind these days. What's on your mind? 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. You can also email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org, on Twitter, @IPRTalk. My guest today, Stefan Schmidt. He is the professor of political science at Iowa State University. He joins us from the studios of Iowa Public Radio in Ames. Good afternoon, Stefan.
Hello, Ben.
Great to have you with us. Also joining us, Wayne Moyer, political science professor at Grinnell College, joining us by phone. Wayne Moyer, welcome.
Thank you.
Let's talk quickly about the Blagojevich outcome here, the long-awaited verdict on the trial of former Illinois Governor Rod Blagojevich given yesterday. Heard on these airwaves this morning that Blago's bravado seems to be back after he waited quietly for the jury to deliver its verdict. The former governor returned to his defiant claims about being the victim of runaway prosecutors, and the federal jury deadlocked yesterday on all but one of those 24 charges, including the most serious of them all, that he tried to sell an appointment to President Barack Obama's old Senate seat. Blagojevich was convicted on a single less serious count of lying to federal agents, and prosecutors have pledged to retry the case as soon as possible. Gentlemen, I'd like to get your thoughts on this verdict, any repercussions you see, but first a short clip of Rod Blagojevich showing some of his typical bravado on this very program in September of last year. How will you like people to look back on this episode in 5 years?
Yeah,
you may be in prison. You may be in prison in 5 years.
No, I won't be. I will be fully vindicated, and I believe, you know, I believe in comebacks, and I believe, as my father taught me, it's not how many times you get knocked down; it's how many times you pick yourself up.
Rod Blagojevich definitely picking himself up yesterday after the verdict. Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University. What do you make of this verdict and its implications?
It was interesting. I mean, he was not convicted by a jury of his peers in Illinois. And I think a jury of his peers in Illinois would look at what Blago was doing and say, this isn't a crime in Illinois. Every governor does this. This is Illinois politics, you know? And the federal prosecutors are trying to nail him on some things with innuendos, and it may have been, you know, unethical or, you know, in bad taste, and he may have been using his office to try and, you know, cut deals. But that's Illinois politics. So in a way, it wasn't a big surprise to me that that they only got him on one count, in which I guess he lied to the FBI, and that's it.
Wayne Moyer, your reaction?
Well, I agree with Stefan. This was a terribly difficult case, I think, for the prosecutors to bring because there was no formal exchange of money. There were a lot of things said over the telephone, but is that more than just usual politics? Don't politicians do that all the time? And so I wasn't surprised by the verdict either. On the other hand, it does say something, I think, in terms of rules of politics and campaign finance contributions and this sort of thing. So it's disappointing, but not surprising.
Does this have any fallout for the Democratic Party? After all, Rod Blagojevich is a Democrat, and the Republicans are often trying to tarnish President Obama with his ties to Chicago politics. Stephen Schmidt.
Oh, the Democrats are going to be beaten up by almost anything that happens this year, you know, and they've already got, you know, two important House members that are under ethics investigation. And both of those, by the way, are also denying that they committed any ethical improprieties. And you know, we'll see what happens with them. But I don't know if this has any implications beyond that, because after all, Blago actually was apparently trying to sell the Senate seat that was vacated by Obama himself when he got elected president. And so in some respects, I think, you know, Obama was sort of the victim of Blagojevich. And I think most Americans remember that Chicago politics is even able to get at least the myth is that it can get American presidents elected by at the last minute, finding lots of voters who are in cemeteries, which is what was alleged to have happened with John F. Kennedy, although subsequent research showed that that wasn't true. But there is the whole myth of Chicago and Illinois politics as being, you know, pretty dirty and pretty corrupt. And so I think probably the fallout is going to be less than the bad economy and the continuous disaster of the Afghanistan war. So we're interested in it because it's such a fascinating story.
Right,
really.
Stephen Schmidt and Wayne Moyer. I wonder if you can reach back in your political experience and what you've been studying as political scientists, the character of Rod Blagojevich is so interesting. If there have been other politicians from our past that are cut of some of the same cloth that Rod Blagojevich is, and bravado's a big part of that. Wayne Moyer, can you think of any?
Well, there was some of it with Tom DeLay, the former Democratic leader of the House of Representatives, who essentially was forced out of his leadership role. Let me just say on the Blagojevich thing, I think this is a distraction. The real issues in Illinois are jobs, and I think by the time of the election, the jobs issue will take much more precedence over this.
Okay.
Dan Rustinkowski is a case that comes to mind, who was a congressman from Illinois and was actually convicted of corruption. And you know, so that's one example that's kind of close to home, at least.
Join our discussion. It's Politics Day here on The Exchange, 1-866-780-9100, 1-866-780-9100. Email us, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Twitter at IPR Talk. Political scientists Stephen Schmidt of Iowa State University, Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College with us for this hour. Let's move right into the topic, which you've alluded to, the midterm elections and the coming presidential elections in 2012. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee, if you recall, the come-from-behind GOP winner of the Iowa caucuses in 2008, an early choice of Hawkeye State Republicans. Again, a new poll showing that. The survey conducted for the website iowarepublican.com, this was late last month, surveyed about 400 likely Republican caucus goers across Iowa, puts Mike Huckabee in the number one spot with 22%. In second, former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney at 18%. He was the runner-up in 2008. And Newt Gingrich coming in third. Sarah Palin fourth, then followed by Ron Paul, Tim Pawlenty, John Thune, and Rick Santorum with less than 1%. What do you draw from this poll, Wayne Moyer?
Well, I mean, this isn't surprising to me in that that people who are at the top of the Republican list have spent a lot of time already in Iowa, and they're well known to the Iowa electorate. I think it's much too soon to say very much about where things are actually going to come out in the caucus, but it's not at all surprising that people who spent a lot of time in Iowa are at the top in previous campaign mm-hmm. are at the top of the list.
So, Stefan Schmidt, simply a matter of name recognition, not true political support?
Well, also, I mean, Huckabee does fit the profile of Republican activists in Iowa in terms of his conservative political values and position on issues, and that was a pretty good match during the caucuses, and it's the same group of active Republicans in Iowa who probably gave him the number one spot here. The other thing is that we don't know if Sarah Palin is going to jump into this fray or not. I mean, she came in this poll, but she hasn't really been in Iowa except for a little book signing, and there's lots of speculation that she may throw the hat or the shotgun into the ring, whatever it is she happens to be carrying at the time. And if she does, I think it'll be very interesting to see those numbers and how they begin to jiggle out as the campaign really gets going. I think Wayne is right. It's early. They haven't really been campaigning. They've been kind of showing a little ankle and coming and supporting some candidates for other offices in Iowa and raising funds for them and, you know, maybe eating some deep fried stuff on sticks at the state fair.
That's right.
But next year is when we'll see, you know, the more valuable and data-rich polls when they really start hitting the airwaves and stuff.
Polls, of course, matter, but perhaps even mattering more are the war chests they have. How do these candidates size up? Can you tell us anything about, in terms of fundraising, how they're looking? Wayne Moyer, how about you?
I don't have a very good sense yet of how the candidates are doing in terms of their war chests. Clearly, there'll be a lot of Republican Party money coming into this, but where will it be going? I don't have a good sense yet.
Yeah. One of my former students is an advisor, pretty close advisor to Mitt Romney, and we talk every once in a while about what's going on. Romney has a lot of money. He has a huge chunk of money set aside. He's apparently sort of not really sure yet if he's going to go in, but if he does, from the numbers, Newt Gingrich and Mitt Romney have a ton of money. I think Huckabee doesn't have quite as much, and you know, some of the others probably are just getting started, so they haven't really built up much. So it is going to be interesting to see when the ads begin to hit the airwaves, who is going to come out aggressively with some you know, strong campaign advertising to try and entice Republican activists, you know, to go for them in the caucuses.
So happy to have Stefan Schmidt with us, political scientist from Iowa State University, along with Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. I'd like you to join our conversation with your political thoughts about the midterm elections, about a Republican who might be able to unseat Obama. It's early stages, yet a year and a half before the caucuses that will look at those contenders. Also, other things we want to look at is Governor Chet Culver conceding he has made some mistakes. We'll talk about that when we come back. 1-866-780-9100. What's on your political mind? It's Political Day here on The Exchange with political scientist Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University and Wayne Moyer of Grinnell College. 1-866-780-9100. 1-866-780-9100. The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. And let's go to our first caller, Larry, joining us from Webster City. Good afternoon, Larry.
Hi. One of the things I wanted to ask your panel about is whether they felt that the drastic surge to the right of the GOP in order to placate the base and the Tea Party is going to cause them to take such extreme positions to avoid being primary that they end up not being able to find their way back to the middle to get elected in the general. It seems to me that there are a lot of positions being taken right now that are just simply unconstitutional or extremely xenophobic. For example, the whole ground zero mosque controversy and some of the other things that are being brought up, immigration and so forth. that I just wonder whether they're going to be able to actually find their way back to the point where reasonable people will want to consider voting for them.
Okay, Larry, let's take your response to your question from Stefan Schmidt, first of all.
Well, it's interesting because, you know, your interpretation, my interpretation, and Wayne Moyer's interpretation of the Constitution and what's right and wrong and not is important, but public opinion polls and the mood of the public is what ultimately drives election results. And on many of the issues that you just mentioned, the caller that is, public opinion is pretty strongly on the side, not necessarily of the Tea Party, but on that issue. I mean, on immigration, the numbers are very high for a much harsher immigration policy, closed borders and so on the building of the mosque in Manhattan. At least the poll numbers that I've been looking at are pretty strongly saying that it's not a good idea, perhaps not, you know, condemning Islam, but saying that maybe there was a little lack of sensitivity. So we'll have to see, because what we may think is reasonable or not may not be how American public opinion feels. Also, in fact, in Iowa, the candidate of the Tea Party did not win the nomination for governor. It was Terry Branstad who won that. And Branstad is not generally identified with more exciting and sharp-edged wing of the party.
Mm-hmm. Wayne Moyer, how do you see the influence of the Tea Party, the so-called base, in the race?
Interesting test on this. I agree with Stefan that on a lot of these issues, public opinion is leaning in the direction of those on the right at the moment. But how will people actually vote in November? I don't think the mosque issue is going to be that important in November.
Yeah.
And I have a feeling that it will hurt the Republicans, because so many of the candidates, I think, who are supported by the far right were perceived to be weaker than the moderate candidates.
Mm. Well, that's true. On the other hand, Harry Reid, came out, and he's not usually viewed as, right wing, on the mosque issue. So, there's this kind of fine walking the line between what you personally think as a politician and what your constituents in your state, whether it's Iowa or Nevada, think about various issues, and sometimes you have to go that direction. I mean, even Chet Culver in Iowa has had to finesse the issue of gay marriage, for example. You know, I don't think he's ever come out and said he supports gay marriage. He said he's come out and said that the Iowa Supreme Court has declared gay marriage, the prohibition against gay marriage, to be unconstitutional. But even somebody like Culver has had to finesse a little bit. So it is an interesting ideological battle that's going on between a fairly conservative public opinion on issues. And yes, some of the candidates are probably way too radical to be able to get independence. But Wayne, you and I probably both have been really interested in how non-party identified voters, that is to say independents, feel on these issues. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for the Democrats, a lot of independents are leaning much more to the right than the Democrats would like.
Mm. Interestingly, also, the Mother Mosque of America, which purports to be the oldest purpose-built mosque in the United States, is in Iowa,
Cedar Rapids,
completed in 1934. Yeah. And we want to ask our listeners to chime in on this. Does a group have the right to build a religious institution on privately owned property, no matter how sensitive the location? 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Anne is joining us from Cedar Rapids. Good afternoon, Anne. You have a view on this?
Yes, I'd like to clarify something first, though. The World Trade Center, wasn't that an office building that was filled with offices from companies and countries all around the world?
Yes, it was.
Yes.
Okay, so there were a lot of Muslims in that office building the day it went down?
A lot of Muslims died as well. Jews, Christians, all faiths.
Right, all faiths. Hindus, Buddhists, whatever. When did Ground Zero become a Christian holy site?
Hmm.
You know, I think people are not, and when they talk about this, aren't talking about all the Muslims and other religions and probably atheists that died there too that day.
Well, maybe it's not so much as the people who died, but the people who committed the act, who came Islamic countries.
Right, but people are not remembering the fact that a lot of innocent Muslims and other faiths also died, and all of a sudden they're talking about what they call Ground Zero as a Christian holy site, and it's not.
Hmm.
I think another thing that's important here, the people who launched the bombing were a fringe group in Islam, and they weren't reflective of the religion as a whole. And there's a fight going on inside Islam between the moderates and the extremists.
Mm-hmm.
And to take a strong stand against the mosque sort of emphasizes the cultural conflict between Islam and the United States. And I don't think that's the sort of thing that we want to promote.
A fringe group, but also a group that overwhelmingly comes from a country that the United States is very friendly with, Saudi Arabia, right?
But at very much at odds with the Saudi Arabian regime, which is, in fact, doing its best at the moment to, I think, using brutal means to put it down.
Yeah. Unfortunately, public opinion isn't often formed by reasonable and complex discussions like this. I mean, most Germans were not really Nazis. You know, we know that. And yet, you know, it would have been pretty unthinkable to have a German cultural center built somewhere in the United States right after World War II. And the same has been said about, you know, building a Japanese cultural center somewhere near Pearl Harbor. So, you know, there is a certain amount of tremendous emotional rather than rational analysis that goes into this sort of reaction. And I think that's what we're seeing here, frankly.
Let's see if we can get a quick call in before our break at 7:30. Sam from Cedar Falls, good afternoon.
Hi. First, I want to say I love your show.
Great. Thanks for joining us. What's on your mind, Sam?
Well, I just was sort of brought up thinking that the whole point of the Constitution was that it's majority rules and that minorities have rights. And although personally I'm without religion, I can't stand the idea that one religion would, just because it's the majority, take over a private area and say that this religion can't build there just because they're unpopular at the moment.
Mm-hmm. And that's essentially what President Obama said in some of his remarks, to paraphrase.
And I definitely agree with his religious, tolerance.
Mm-hmm. Here we have a president who is not evidently paying attention to polls. He's, by all appearances, speaking his mind, his firm beliefs, his values. He wanted to express them. He came out on this. Or was this somehow politically calculated, do you think, Stefan Schmidt?
Well, come on, guys. President Obama first wouldn't comment on this because he said it was a local issue. Then he commented on it and said, you know, it was religious freedom and that he certainly approved of the building of the mosque and cultural center at this site. Then he backpedaled again and said, well, you know, that he believed it was religious freedom in general, but he wasn't going to comment on the building at this particular facility. I mean, if you read O'Dowd's comment, Maureen Dowd's comment in the New York Times today, you're going to be very shocked because she's really hard on Obama for essentially waffling, weaving, zigzagging, mm-hmm. and being all over the place on this issue. And it shows you how complex it is, even if you are, as he is, sort of committed to the idea of, you know, of equal treatment for religions and religious freedom. He still understands, apparently, that he has stepped into a political wet tar that is sticking to his feet and is trying to somehow scramble himself out of it. And that's, I think, very interesting. It's very complicated.
Stefan Schmidt, thank you for those comments. Please stay with us of Iowa State University. Sam, thank you for the points from Cedar Falls. Others, please join our conversation with our political thoughts and questions. 1-866-780-9100. We're going to take a quick few minutes break, but when we come back, we'd like to entertain more of your questions and comments. 1-866-780-9100. Also joining us, Wayne Moyer, political science professor of Grinnell College. 1-866-780-9100. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Great to have you with us for the exchange over the noon hour here on Iowa Public Radio. I'm Ben Kiefer, and tomorrow on this program, I won't be here, but oh, it's going to be a great show. Catherine Perkins and John Pemble will take us to the Iowa State Fair. We'll hear the true stories of Iowa heroes. We'll melt aluminum with Project Aware and talk about talk with Jason Brown about the life of a full-time country music singer and part-time truck driver. That's tomorrow, Thursday, at this time on The Exchange. Today, it's a political day, a chance to get some analysis from recent states and about recent state and national political news, a chance for you to let us know what's on your mind, 1-866-780-9100, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org is our email. Glad to have with us today Wayne Moyer, political science professor at Grinnell College, along with Stefan Schmidt, professor of political science at Iowa State University. And when we left off, it seems people are very interested in talking about the mosque potentially being built within a few blocks of Ground Zero and the type of aspects, the issues that brings to mind. And we mentioned in the first half hour that the Mother Mosque of America, which purports to be the oldest purpose-built mosque in the United States, is in Cedar Rapids, completed in 1934. I want to ask you, before we go back to our phone lines, Wayne Moyer, let me start with you. How does anti-Islamic rhetoric play in Iowa's political arena? Are we more or less tolerant of minority faiths than other parts of the country?
I think that we're probably more tolerant here. I don't think the mosque issue is going to play very well in Iowa. And I don't think it's going to make any difference in the governor's race. And I think freedom of religion is very well established in this state. And so I don't think this is going to make any difference in either the gubernatorial or senatorial campaigns.
Stefan Schmidt?
I kind of disagree with my dear colleague. You will remember that a group was going to buy a piece of property in the Cedar Rapids area to build a camp, summer camp for young Muslim men. And when that issue broke in the news, all hell broke loose, pardon the expression. And there was an enormous firestorm over it, bringing young Muslim men to Iowa and putting them in a summer camp in Cedar Rapids. And the idea eventually, as far as I know, really went away. The camp was never built. So, you know, that was before 9/11, I believe. It may have been afterwards, but some of our listeners probably remember. So, you know, we think of Iowans as being very tolerant. Generally, that's true, but that issue came up, and you know, I think it won't play very big in the governor's race for sure, but it's there as one more little thing that Culver has to sort of struggle with, I guess, as the Democrat.
Or maybe you're saying it's doubtful whether it carries into a year and a half an hour into caucus reason or even into the general election, but we have to remember a sizable minority of Americans believe that Barack Obama is Muslim.
Yeah. Right, and a sizable majority believes that he wasn't born in the United States, too.
Yeah. Let's go to Julie in Benton County. Julie, what's on your political mind?
Yes, I want to thank you, your guests, and your panelists, and I have a couple of points, I believe, with a couple of your callers that one thing that was pointed out was that 9/11 was a universal tragedy. And so I wanted to weigh in on that. And the other thing is that the issue as to whether it is local or not, I think whether we can agree that it's a local issue or not, I do believe that more potential exists.
Sorry, Julie, cut you off there. I'm very sorry for that. Reaction to that. So local, I guess some of the polls overwhelmingly in New York State I read this morning against the building of that mosque. Stefan Schmidt?
Yeah, I think I said that earlier that, you know, you can't, I mean, you can argue with public opinion and say how bad it is and too bad that people are thinking this way. But public opinion is the, you know, the engine that drives politicians and often drives elections. And by the way, this camp in Cedar Rapids, if you can look it up and Google it, it was a piece of land that was owned by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that was kind of set aside for Muslim youth camps of America in Cedar Rapids, and people might want to follow that story on Google because there are quite a few postings on it, and some of them are pretty disturbing and radical by some groups that are sort of patriot groups and so on.
Do you think Iowans are more or less tolerant of minority faiths? To join our political discussion, 1-866-780-9100, The Exchange at iowapublicradio.org. Rick is joining us from Iowa City. Good afternoon, Rick.
First, let me just start out by saying that in my lifetime, I never thought I'd see a president that could sink lower than Nixon or Reagan, but Bush surprised me. However, back to public opinion, after 9/11, when he came out in support of Muslim religion, Islam, as against the fringe, do you think that he could help tone down the rhetoric if he was to come out and just restate what he said to the nation after the towers went down?
It's an interesting thought, because some of the words of George Bush you could think didn't come from George Bush if you would think of him as a cliche president, as some people do. Stefan Schmidt. He did make some very pro-Islamic remarks, didn't he?
Well, I mean, Bush was trying to separate out the sort of allies and friends of the United States, Saudi Arabia and other countries that some people think, you know, are not such wonderful friends, but they were certainly, you know, the relationship with them was pro-American, against Osama bin Laden and radical Islam. And so Bush was trying to work that side of the road. Obama, of course, did that as well with his speech in Egypt, where he really tried to reach out to the Islamic world, the moderate Islamic world. The thing with the World Trade Center controversy here is that I don't think anybody really prepared the American public properly when the story broke. People didn't know who was building the mosque, that this was a group of Muslims who don't agree with Osama bin Laden. I think someone out there totally failed to prepare the ground and say, these are the kind of people that love the U.S., live here, are not radicals, are not part of the jihad, and are essentially opposed to what the radicals did. It sort of was sprung on everybody as a big surprise, and there was the mystery of who's paying for the mosque and so on. And that all raises a lot of suspicion, and someone really dropped the ball on that.
Let's try to go to one more caller on this mosque issue before we move on. A couple of other things to talk about this hour. Sherry is joining us from Ottumwa. I think you want to talk about this issue as well, huh, Sherry?
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. Hey, you know, what about all of the fundamentals of religion, love, compassion, tolerance of each other, and all of those wonderful qualities that religion brings to mind? I would think, has anybody ever considered maybe they could build it somewhere else out of respect for everyone? And then they would come off as being the bigger, the better person, the more kind-hearted, loving, tolerant entity of them all.
I think, Stefan, you said it earlier that rational argument and thought doesn't always apply in the world of politics, does it?
Well, it doesn't, but I think the caller is sort of right in that someone, even in the group that is building this, should have realized that, you know, this wasn't going to be an easy task to sell this to the American public, that there is a lot of sort of nerve-wracking sensitivity about Islam and the World Trade Center and the symbolism of all of that. And it could have been done either by preparing the ground much better or by saying, we should build one, but build it somewhere else where that issue isn't going to come up, because there are a couple of mosques apparently already within not a huge distance from the World Trade Center.
Yeah,
and nobody raised any questions about that.
Is 12 blocks.
Yeah,
away.
Yeah. So nobody's raised questions about that. Yeah. But, you know, so it was all handled very poorly. And I think we're now stuck with this terrible, you know, sort of emotion driven and very political issue. Obviously, Newt Gingrich and others have come out extremely strongly on this and are making, I think, a lot of political hay out of it. Riding on the back of public opinion.
Professor Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University. Yeah, Wayne Moyer.
Just add a little bit to this. Mm-hmm. There was a piece, I think, in a New York Times discussion on it this morning that I think is appropriate. Newt Gingrich and Sarah Palin have clearly reached the public. The president has not. And the problem is, can the president reach the public on this? And the suggestion there, and I think it's a good one, is that we need to allow this mosque to be there to really show that we support religious freedom, not only at home, but around the world, and that if we don't allow the mosque here, how can we really be supportive of religious freedom in other areas of the world? And I think that's an important point.
I wanted to, before we wind up this hour, we have about 10 minutes left, and we certainly want to invite our listeners to join in with calls and their questions, 1-866-780-9100. This week, Governor Chet Colver conceded that his first term in office has been riddled with mistakes. He spoke at the Des Moines Register's soapbox that was at the Iowa State Fair. He said he took full responsibility for the problems that developed during his first term at the Iowa Division of Alcoholic Beverages, at the Department of Aging, and the Iowa Film Office. Wayne Moyer, what do you make of this admission?
I think it's poor politics. On one hand, I think it's a mistake for a politician never to say that he's done something wrong. I think sometimes that politicians need to say that they've made mistakes. But I think what the governor should be doing is talking about his positive accomplishments at this stage of the game, rather than being on the defensive and talking about things that he's done wrong, and doing it in a very general way so that people can build it up and think that there are many more wrong things that have actually been done.
Stefan Schmidt.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you know, Terry Branstad, even though he made a lot of mistakes during his, 50 years as governor? well, it seemed that long. I was here during all of them. I actually served as Spanish-speaking people's commission chair during his administration. He never took the hook when they threw all kinds of things at him about the economy and about raising taxes and other things. You talk only about your accomplishments, and I don't think it was very good politics. And when Democratic National Committee Chair Tim Kaine, made some comments and said, oh, yes, this was very brave of him. I have a picture in front of me of Tim Kaine looking at Culver speaking, and he doesn't look very happy. I mean, he didn't have a choice but to say that this was fine and okay. But you stress the positive, what things you've done, how Iowa is doing much better than other states, how you managed to struggle with a budget deficit and not slash and burn too much, and you talk about the future and you talk about what you're going to be doing. It's not good politics to talk about mistakes and make confessions like that.
Culver still trailing GOP challenger Terry Branstad, the former governor, by a large margin. So what does Culver have to do to find some traction here? You both agree, don't highlight possible mistakes you've made in your tenure. What do you need to do? Emphasize the positive. Anything else? Wayne Moyer.
Well, I think he needs to be more decisive and positive about things that he's done. He doesn't come across as really being dynamic and emphasizing the positive elements of things that have happened and the things that are good in the state. And I really think if he was more dynamically and unequivocally positive, it would help him a lot.
Stefan, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I agree with that. The other thing is, show up at disasters, for God's sake. I mean, you know, when there's a power failure in the middle of the winter during blizzards and an entire county is without electricity, the first thing you do is show up there with a unit of the National Guard. When there are giant floods in various places, Ames, Iowa is an example, you show up in a National Guard helicopter and you say, what can I do for you? We're ready. You know, we want to help. He never shows up for disasters, and it's the one big rule of successful politics is, and Bush learned that, and Obama kind of learned it, but you know, it was even weak on Obama with the oil spill. You're in charge. People want leadership, and disasters are the best place where you can show that government is relevant to people's lives and daily activities. And Culver seems to just not be able to do that. I think he also needs to reshuffle his team again. I don't think he has very good advice. I think it's somewhat immature, and he needs some experienced and really politically sharp people to push him along. He's very good one-on-one. He's extremely engaging. He is extremely, as Wayne said, not engaged at a distance when he's sort of doing larger public appearances, and he needs to, get some more charisma. I don't know where you get that. He also needs to tell his dad, former Senator John Culver, to stay at Harvard and not come to Iowa, because you know, how good is advice from a one-term senator, on how people should vote and behave? And John Culver is a very smart guy, but I doubt if almost anybody in Iowa remembers who he is. And so that didn't look very good. You know, you bring in daddy from Harvard to come and tell people that your son is really a great governor and they should vote for him. I don't think that's good politics either.
You agree, Wayne Moyer, bringing in former Senator John Culver, the father, was not effective?
I don't think it was very effective, although I honestly don't think it will make very much difference one way or the other.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Don in Iowa City, 1-866-780-9100. What's on your political mind? Don.
Thank you for taking my call. I take exception to the fact that you folks and think that Culver made a mistake by taking responsibility. We're still stuck in probably our largest foreign policy fiasco in the history of the country, and all we got was that mistakes were made. Nobody in the Bush administration took responsibility for anything, and I think part of being an effective politician is to be a responsible individual.
Mm-hmm. And admit mistakes. So this raises your esteem for your thoughts of Culver by this admission.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Don, thank you very much for that comment. 1-866-780-9100. And let's go to a couple of other things. I wanted to now that we have the Gulf oil spill, you talked about disasters, Stefan, and parachuting into those or getting your helicopter to go there to show your concern. The oil spill has been stopped. Thank goodness. It's out of the headlines. Will this be thought of as Obama's Katrina, as some Republicans claim, or will it have little effect on either the midterm or the 2012 election, do you think? Wayne Moyer.
I think it will not be a Katrina. I think one big difference, the effects of Katrina with all of the houses that were ruined and people that were physically displaced, are very long-lasting. There may be long-term and serious long-term environmental damage, but the beaches will be cleaned up fairly quickly. People will be getting back to work. The fishermen are getting back to fish now. So I think the fact that it has been stopped and that the oil is being cleaned up, it will not have it anywhere near the amount of visible after effects.
Stefan Schmidt, will we see this in political ads by the Republicans?
I don't think so. I think they've got so many other things that they're going to slam on Obama that, they, you know, Katrina will be gone. And they don't want to remind people that it was deregulation by the Republicans that largely got oil companies and the Minerals Management Authority and NOAA and others to be very lax with private capitalist entrepreneurs. So I think Republicans who... should take some responsibility for this after all, are going to walk away from this one and not really pay much attention to it, if in fact, it, you know, everything is under control by then.
We've got a few minutes left. What other things are on your minds that we haven't mentioned in the political sphere? Wayne Moyer, anything in the miscellaneous category you'd like to mention?
Well, one thing is I think the coming year is going to be very good for the farm economy in Iowa. I mean, the fact that the Russians have had a failure, pretty much a failure of their grain harvest and also in the Ukraine, and that wheat prices are up, and that's going to also mean that corn prices are up. And so I think farmers are going to do very well this year. I don't know how that will play out in the election, but I don't think that it will hurt Culver. I'm not sure how much it will help him.
Stefan Schmidt?
That's a good point. I think in terms of the national races and the economy will play a big role. And, you know, depending on what happens next year with jobs, I mean, jobs are still, you know, the terrible sort of a pain in the side of American society. Businesses are recovering. They've got a ton of cash on hand, but they're not hiring anybody. And whether hiring will start and that whole stress will decline, I think will, in fact, then determine what goes on. For the 2010 elections, it's too late. I mean, the economy is not going to recover, and I think the Democrats are going to take a really big punch in the nose.
Right.
They may lose the House and the Senate this time around.
So it's acknowledged that Democrats will lose seats in both houses. What's the range of loss that you see, Stefan Schmidt? What is the range from where to where in the House and the Senate?
I'll be honest with you, I don't know, but I think that they could very well lose a majority in both the House and the Senate. And then Obama will have then he'll have to work bipartisan, you know, with the opposition. A lot of people are actually saying the best thing for Democrats would be for the Republicans to sweep everything, because then they're stuck with all of these problems and the Democrats can become the opposition to point out how bad things are.
In time for 2012.
Yeah, exactly.
Political scientist Wayne Moyer, what are your thoughts on the midterms?
Well, I'm less worried that the Democrats will lose both houses. I think for the Republicans to take the Senate will be very difficult because they have to win virtually every competitive race. I don't think they'll do that. I think the fact that some of the Tea Party candidates have actually won is going to hurt the Republicans somewhat. So I doubt if they'll take the Senate. I think there's a chance they'll take the House, but I also think there's a good chance that they won't.
Mm-hmm. The Tea Party influence in that people are nominated who are too far to the right to be elected.
Who will be weaker in the general election.
Okay, very interesting. Thank you very much for the time we've spent together. Wayne Moyer, a political scientist, political science professor at Grinnell College. Stefan Schmidt of Iowa State University. I want to thank you very much for spending the hour with us and giving us your insights and thoughts.
It was fun.
Yeah, thanks.
And The Exchange is produced by Catherine Perkins and Alex Hoyer, with assistance today from Lindsay Moon, technical support from Dennis Reese, and the executive producer of Iowa Public Radio's talk shows is Jeff Schmidt. If you caught part of this program, you want to see the listen to the entire program, go to our website, iowapublicradio.org. There we have podcasts available. You can also listen to on-demand audio of The Exchange and all the other programs you hear on Iowa Public Radio. We always welcome your comments and questions about this program. Write us anytime, theexchange@iowapublicradio.org. Our theme music was composed and performed by Dan Knight. The Exchange is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.